Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
If you look around New England, you'll find a rich and varied array of immigrants and refugees, from Haitians to Cambodians, Guatemalans to Somalis. But what goes on inside these communities to many of us is invisible. So today, we begin a week-long series to explore these invisible communities. WBUR's Bianca Vasquez-Tonis will visit various towns to tell us stories of assimilation into American culture. And Bianca joins us this morning to talk about what's coming up this week. Good morning, Bianca.
Good morning, Bob.
Tell us, first of all, about this idea of invisibility. It's certainly not true that we don't know anything about the immigration story, especially considering all the stories that have flooded the airwaves in the last 2 weeks in relation to the new Arizona state law that is trying to control illegal immigration there.
That's right. And the phenomenon of illegal immigration has certainly captivated our attention. We've heard lots of stories over the years about whether we should allow illegal immigrants to work in this country. Or in Massachusetts, for example, we always focus on certain immigrants, Brazilians in this case, because they've been the fastest growing group of immigrants here. But I think one of the dangers of this entire debate is that people who don't interact with a diverse group of immigrants every day assume that all of these immigrant experiences of living in this country are the same.
And so, Bianca, the series that we start right now on Morning Edition is going to look at some of the stories that we don't hear about in the immigrant communities.
Right. Because there's a lot that's going on in immigrant communities that we should worry about and marvel at, more than just this question of illegal versus legal. What really brought this home for me this year was the census. A lot of Massachusetts population growth is due to foreign-born people moving to the state. We need them to fill out the census. Massachusetts could lose a U.S. congressional seat. But immigrants and refugees are some of the least likely folks to do it. The census is almost a measure of our own success reaching out to these groups and their own attitudes about integration and participation. So I thought it would be interesting to look at other instances of newcomers making choices about how to live here, whether to deliberately be invisible or carefully craft a unique identity to stand out from the rest of the population.
And tell us then, what community are we looking at today? Where are we starting?
Today we're going to New Bedford.
New Bedford, the site of the 2007 immigration raid when federal agents hauled off hundreds of factory workers, most of them illegal. Governor Patrick called it a humanitarian disaster back then because the raid separated so many mothers from their children.
That's exactly right. And Bob, if there was ever an invisible community, it was the people who worked inside that factory. The surprising thing, though, is that some of the people say they benefited from the raid. At the time, the 2007 raid was the biggest workplace raid in the country. Boston media outlets, including WBZ Television, documented the event in graphic detail.
And today there were horror stories of workers fleeing the building and even jumping into New Bedford Harbor to escape the federal agents.
Juana Garcia was working at the factory that day.
Well, when I saw that the agents carried guns, I thought they were going to shoot us. I thought we were all going to die that day.
Garcia and many others were sent to Texas. Many women with small children had been released, but Garcia refused to divulge any information about her 2-year-old son. She was afraid that immigration agents would pick him up, even though he's a U.S. citizen. It wasn't until her son got very sick and his doctor sent a letter to immigration officials that they sent her back to New Bedford. Garcia had been detained a total of 9 days.
When I returned home, I approached my son and he didn't even recognize me. For him, I was already a stranger.
Critics would say Garcia and her family never should have come here, that they brought all of this trouble on themselves. But Garcia says it was the only way to stay alive.
We were not welcome in the country. It's like we are animals. Actually, worse than animals.
Garcia and about half of the people detained in the 2007 raid belong to an ethnic group called the Mayaquiche, indigenous Guatemalans. The Mayaquiche have had a bad relationship with the Spaniards who colonized Guatemala. That culminated in a long, bloody civil war that targeted the Mayaquiche. So many Mayaquiche have died that the United Nations called it a genocide. The civil war officially ended in 1996, but many say that didn't stop the persecution of the Mayaquiche. So rather than continue to face persecution, Garcia and her family moved illegally to the United States.
Well, when we arrived here, we never thought of talking to anyone. We saw that there were a lot of Maya Quiche here and people from our same town, but we didn't talk to them, and even less to strangers who weren't Quiche.
Here in New Bedford, Garcia and her family didn't go out. She never learned that some of the most established people in the group had won political asylum based on their experience in Guatemala.
They lived, in a sense, underground, under the table.
Longtime immigration attorney John Wilshire Carrera.
We didn't know they were there. We've been doing immigrant rights work for years.
But when the federal agents stormed that factory in March 2007, it changed everything for this community. A group that was once invisible became visible. The ironic thing is that it took this immigration raid to improve the lives of many Maya Quiche. That's thanks in part to Anibal Lucas.
Ese es lo menos. Ese horario para ir.
Lucas is an unlikely hero. He is a grumpy man with two small kids at home, but he spent the last 3 years ferrying people from New Bedford to Boston. He realized after the raid that his community would have a hard time fighting deportation, since many of them don't drive and wouldn't make it to their court appointments in Boston.
Yo te llamo a ver cómo estoy allá en Boston.
It's 7 p.m. and he's arranging his rides for the next day. Lucas never intended to be an organizer, but he's become the center of this community, sponsoring classes on immigrant rights at work, even social gatherings.
Nos ha costado tanto, tanto.
It's been a lot of work. First of all, we don't speak English, and we didn't know anything about computers. I didn't know how to write. It was really hard for me.
In March, Lucas took about 50 Maya Quiche members to Washington for a national immigration reform rally. Here's a group of people who just a few years ago were afraid of leaving their homes, and now they're marching on Washington. All of this can be traced back to the raid of 2007.
Remembering back on that day, at that moment, it was awful.
Juana Capir was detained in the raid.
But at the same time, I think I'm better off because of the raid.
Capir has a green card now, all because she met an attorney after she was detained. After getting her green card, Capir was less afraid to do things. Now she visits her children's school and escorts other Maya Quiche women to court. She even marched on Washington. She's not the only one who's changed her mind about the raid. Martina Hernandez received political asylum and is on her way to getting a green card.
Difficult and terrible things happened to me. But sometimes I thank God that they did.
Chopping vegetables in her New Bedford kitchen, Juana Garcia is still waiting for the judge to decide whether she'll get political asylum. For now, she says, the raid gave her lots of less tangible benefits.
We realized we had rights, and we started to understand how to live here. And that's when I started to take charge of my life.
The legacy of the New Bedford raid will be complicated. Certainly, dozens of people were deported back to Guatemala. But many are still here, trying to win political asylum. Some are getting green cards, and so are their friends and family who weren't even part of the raid. But the bigger legacy might be that this community that was once underground was forced out of hiding, and they've decided to make the most of it. For WBUR, I'm Bianca Vasquez-Tonas.
John Wilshire Carrera runs the immigration clinic at Greater Boston Legal Services. You heard his voice just moments ago in Bianca's story. His agency represents 110 people of those who were detained in the New Bedford raid. And John is in the studio now. John, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
As we heard, almost 400 illegal immigrants were swept up in the raid. Bianca reported that things did not turn out as well for some of those who got caught. Tell us what happened in some of the less fortunate cases.
They were in prison for a long time in Texas. They didn't know what was going on. A lot of them could barely communicate to anybody because they didn't speak Spanish very well at all, and they didn't speak English at all. They didn't know they had any rights. Eventually, a number of them got removed. Some of them got removed because...
Sent back to their...
Back to their countries. Yeah, to Guatemala, a number of people from El Salvador and Honduras, too, but mostly Guatemala and Honduras. Since they've been sent back, we obviously don't know what's going on with them, except that we hear through family members that a number of people are in hiding.
And what's happened to their families who remain here?
The families here have had a very hard time surviving without them. A lot of times they were like one of the main breadwinners of the family, and it's been very, very hard for them.
Do you know, did any of the families who were separated from those who were sent back to their home countries, did the families end up leaving as well?
Some of them did. There's very few.
So for many of those folks, after all of this time, life is still very much a daily struggle.
For the people who remain here, it definitely is, yeah. And as the interviews show, I mean, a number of people are really moving forward because they've been able to get safety in this country, and now they have full status and they're moving on. But a large number of other people are still in the process of trying to find safety here.
Would you say it's across the board for people from all communities beyond the Maya Quiché? Have the Salvadorans and the Hondurans sort of benefited, although I'm not sure benefited is, yeah, quite the right word, but has their life changed since the raid?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't quite say benefited either, but I think it's definitely changed their lives, and a lot of people have grabbed onto it. There's a number of Honduran and Salvadorans who were also picked up, and many of them were women. And a lot of them suffered from, you know, gender-based targeting at home. They have been also able to win their cases, a number of them. And so I think, you know, people listening to them for the first time and their stories being respected and made credible, you know, when they see that somebody in a position of authority respects what they have to say, I think it makes a huge difference. And so I think that's been changing a lot of the relationship as well. A lot of these women are really standing up and taking charge of their lives.
Do you sense a fundamental difference between the way we're handling the situation with illegal immigrants here in Massachusetts or New England than what's going on in Arizona right now, or what we perceive is going on in Arizona after the passage of that very controversial state law?
Well, I think on one level, there's a huge difference, because I think here people are much more open and much less threatening at this point around these issues, and much more willing to help people sort of move on with their lives and become part of society and understand it. Now, you could see it around everywhere in terms of just talking to people and just going to places, because what I understand from people that I know who are in Arizona and also people who are working there, that it is a very, very tense situation there. It is like an apartheid. It's an immigrant apartheid. So I think there's that huge difference. And so I think, you know, we have our problems, and it's easy to blame other people. And so immigration is always an issue that could easily become a huge issue in this state as well if we don't address the issues. This is a state where we can have those discussions, but every once in a while when people are upset, you could see that it raises its ugly head, and that's a real problem.
John Wilshire Carrera, who runs the immigration clinic at the Greater Boston Legal Services, thanks a lot for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.